It's episode 570 of the Locked On Texas Rangers podcast. On today's show, I have Paul Holden on to talk about last night's crazy, weird, frustrating, upsetting ending to a game, a weird umpiring rule, what the heck a bona fide slide is, and about John Gray and what the heck the Rockies are doing. All that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers. Your daily Texas Rangers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On to the Texas Rangers. I'm your host, Bryce Patrick, here today with a special crossover episode with Paul Holden, host of Locked On Rockies. But first, thank you guys so much for making Locked On Rangers and Locked On Rockies your first listen every single day. If you're not already, go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick. Follow Paul Holden at PaulHolden33. Follow the show at Locked On Rangers and subscribe to Locked On Rangers and Locked On Rockies on YouTube. Joining me today, like I said, Paul Holden, to talk about an absolute travesty of a game last night. That it's been not quite 24 hours. It's been like, I don't know, 18. And I'm still mad online and mad in real life, actually. But how are you doing?
I mean, I am the opposite, actually. I am feeling good. The Rockies pull off a tough road and win completely by their own merit. Definitely no assistance whatsoever by an officiating crew, by New York or anything. Good, hard, solid. I mean, I think the Rockies and Rangers played an absolutely beautiful game of baseball. I can't even get through the sentence without laughing. Oh boy, that was a game. I mean, there was a lot of fun and a lot of good stuff to come from that game, but that's some April baseball right there if we've ever seen some.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I know, like, April's always sloppy, and the shortened spring training means things get even sloppier, but, like, I don't know, it's really frustrating when, like, you know, your starting pitcher goes four innings, and you're like, yeah, that's a good day's work. Yep, that he did his job.
Yeah.
It's just weird, but I actually want to start, before we get into the obvious, you know, I don't know, miscarriage of justice, I should say. But I want to talk about the starting pitcher, Taylor Hearn, who is a local kid who is from just outside of, you know, Dallas, Royce City. If you're familiar, Paul, I know you are a big Royce City guy.
You know, yeah, it's somewhere in that big old state.
It's northeast of Dallas proper. But anyway, Taylor Hearn did a pretty good job working around a lot of base runners. He allowed 8 hits in four innings, but only allowed the one run. And he wouldn't have allowed any runs if Adolis Garcia had made that diving catch. That would have been pretty great stuff. He also struck out 6. But the real special part was his sister. His sister was at the game, and his sister is a news director for a local TV station, I think just north of Dallas. I'm not exactly sure where it is. Somewhere in Texas. But anyway, she was at the game as credentialed media, and she got to ask him a question as his sibling, which was just really sweet. And the question she asked was really sweet, and his answer was just precious. And he just went this long spiel about how thankful he was for her and how much she sacrificed for him to get there. And it was a real heartwarming moment after a real stinker of a game that kind of made me feel much better about baseball.
Yeah, I saw that really cool moment in the post game and cool moment. There's been a lot of in Colorado. There's been a lot of the hometown kid coming up. Kyle Freeland gets the start on opening day. Ty Block comes down and sets down 12 Dodgers in a row. It's you always love that feeling of someone from the hometown getting an opportunity to go after in the bigs. And, you know, but speaking of his performance on the field, I mean, as a Rockies fan, I'm sitting there, you know, starting already, is that road Rockies leaving runners on. Goodness gracious. Especially with the way the bottom of the order, especially, was really barreling up and hitting the ball. You were expecting, all right, great. Elias Diaz hit another double in the gap. That looks wonderful. Here comes Chris Bryant, Charlie Blackmon, and Brendan Rodgers. But then it's strikeout, Charlie Blackmon, unfortunately, just not looking near where we need Charlie Blackmon to be. I mean, the Rockies simply can't leave that many runners on, especially on the road. That I was having flashbacks to 2021 that entire time until late in the game, which was great to see the Rockies come back and win a game on the road after going down 3-1 and getting some late heroics, especially from people that we started turning to last year. Some of these kind of new Rockies faces. I know CJ Krohn doesn't and Connor Joe don't necessarily fall under that for all Rockies fans, but I'm sure for the outside perspective, they're like, who the heck are these guys? Who's Connor Joe, this guy with the mullet coming out here and hitting a bullet in the top of the 10th? So it was great to see that, but man, the Rockies had a lot of opportunities to blow that game open, and they didn't, and that was a disappointment, at least for me.
Yeah, well, I liked that. I liked that they didn't blow it open because I've seen enough games blown open that the Rangers are playing in, and it's usually not by them as of late. But, you know, the Rangers bullpen is not good. They're just not good at this point. I mean, everybody gave up a run. I mean, Greg Holland, I don't really know what they're doing there. I think they're trying to see.
I was still pitching.
Yeah, I mean, he is. I am surprised a little bit, too, because they've got a guy in Round Rock that, like, Nick Snyder, who, you know, throws 100 and has looked amazing in his two Round Rock appearances and was in the majors last year but got hurt and, you know, was pretty decent when he was there, and his stuff's electric. He is not a AAA player right now. He is a big leaguer, and I guess they're just trying to see what the heck they have there, because there's not a lot of primo velocity, but, like...
I was curious, too. I mean, with the way the season has started, I mean, the Rangers have had to use a ton of arms. If I recall correctly, they had something like 7 pitchers used in just last night's game alone, if I have that number correctly. But going on top of, the slugfests in Toronto, I mean, that's a lot of use already for bullpens when people are really scared of what the shortened spring training means for their arms.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this April bullpen, the Rangers, I don't think they're gonna be really careful in April like everybody. I mean, John Gray is already on the IL with a blister, which hurts my feelings. I wanted to see a lot more of John Gray, but we got 4 innings, and, you know, that's 3 more than Corey Kluber ever throw for the stupid Rangers. But but a lot of this bullpen is comprised of guys that are multi-inning guys. Like, that's a lot of almost – all of these guys, Matt Bush, Dennis Santana, I guess Abreu, I don't really know. I've been told that he's technically a multi-inning guy. He only went 1 today. They've also got Brock Burke in there, Brett Martin. Like, these are a lot of guys that can go multiple innings, and Joe Barlow, who is their closer at this point, which he really came on the scene last year. He's got a really nice slider. Fastball is better. But he doesn't quite have that closer stuff. He got a little lucky. He had like a 1.1 ERA last year in 10 or 12 appearances, and like looked pretty good, but like just things were kind of, you know, things were hit kind of hard, and he was walking a few too many guys. But I think he's still a solid big league reliever, but there's not a whole lot of just primo gas, primo nasty breaking stuff that you need in a major league bullpen, like a, you know, Daniel Bard, or I don't know the rest of the Rockies bullpen that well, but Bard's got some primo gas.
Yeah, and man, I thought they were going to put Daniel Bard more in a reliever role and do something, especially with signing Colome and getting in some other pieces there. But yeah, when Daniel Bard's on, man, he's got some great gas, great velocity, and some great bite on his slider. But I don't know what the heck happened on that 0-2 pitch there in the ninth.
It was a gift for Willie Calhoun. This man, I want nothing but good things for Willie Calhoun. He has been through so much the last 2 years, 3 years. Most of his career, actually, has been just like bad freaking luck. He was the primary return of the Yu Darvish trade, so he's been here since 2017. Like, he's one of the longest tenured Rangers at this point, and he's missed most of the last 2 seasons due to stupid jerk pitchers breaking his bones with baseballs. One of them hit him in the face, kept him out most of 2020, wasn't going to be ready. That was really scary from the Dodgers. I Julio Urias was the guy who hit him with that fastball. And then when he came back, he had some hamstring issues, and so he still wasn't healthy even in a shortened season. And then last year, I believe it was his arm that was broken. And he also had some other injury issues and didn't perform very well when he was up. But and he's been hitting the snot out of the baseball the last, you know, the entire season. It's just been like right at guys. Like Bo Bichette, I think, snagged a couple of really hard hit balls that probably should have been doubles in the gap from Willie. Mm-hmm. And he got a gift pitch and he did not freaking miss it. Also, he's like, he's being put in the 8 and 9 spot in this order, which is kind of wild for your DH and a guy who's got that much offensive potential. But like, that's one of the big strengths of this Rangers team so far is the depth of their lineup. Like middle third is, I don't know. There's some questions right now about Adolis and Nathaniel Lowe and, you know, whoever ends up hitting sixth, which sometimes is Cole Calhoun, who has not looked great to start the season, but like Willie Calhoun freaking needed that badly.
And it, yeah, I mean, you mentioned that depth and the Rangers can score. And that's what I was sitting there the whole time when the Rockies were not capitalizing on the runners left on. I was like, this is a Rangers team that just left Toronto. Sure. With not the record you think, but I think I recall a graphic outscoring Toronto.
They did. They outscored him by like 4 runs and they led all of Major League Baseball through the first 3 games in runs scored. Second was the Toronto Blue Jays
right
against the Rangers.
It was I know it was a boat race a bunch of the times between those teams, but that's what I was saying. It's like you can't give a team like the Rangers all these opportunities to stay in this close game when you have multiple opportunities. I'm pretty sure the Rockies had a runner in scoring position the first 4 innings of the game, and were only able to get the 1 run across. Like, you just simply can't do that, and that trickles over again. You know, if you're not playing the Rangers, like, you couldn't let the Dodgers get away with that. You couldn't let the, you know, your divisional rivals get away from that. But again, I think it's only one game. But if you were to take your immediate takeaway, this road Rockies team did come back and make up for the bullpen blunder and in the middle of the bullpen held up too. It was just 1 bad run and some walks. And even though they didn't get the big run, the big hits when they needed to, they got the big hits when they absolutely needed it to, and were able to win the game. I don't necessarily know if you feel the same way about the Rockies last year, especially at this point where they were awful on the road. I mean, I know 4 games in, but it's just one of those early things that I'm looking at. It felt good to get the new season started off when it was oh boy, here we go. The Rockies can't get the run in on the road again. They're gonna lose 3-1 off of 1 bad inning, and they're gonna out hit the Rangers. And then luckily it didn't happen that way. But there's still lots to be seen for the road Rockies, especially because a little bit of help there at the end of that ball game. I don't know the nitty gritty of the slide rule. I'm sure it's something
I have it up here, and we're gonna get into that in a minute. We're also gonna get into John Gray, because there's some John Gray comments that we saw heading into this game, and the nitty gritty of this rule absolutely drives me up a freaking wall. But first, this episode is brought to you by Bet Online. If you want to bet on the umpires screwing over the Texas Rangers in tonight's game, I think you can do that at betonline.net. I don't know if there's a specific line for calls missed, but like, there are other things that you can bet on. If the Rangers are going to make the playoffs, if the Rockies are going to make the playoffs, which I think is some very steep odds, steep as the Colorado Mountains.
There you go. The Rockies. You could have just said the Colorado Rockies, because then you would have been on it still.
I would have, but I wanted the intentional mislead. But you know, if you want to, you know, make your bets on some sports, they've got all your sports wagering needs. You know, they've got playoff stuff for basketball. Both of our local teams are in the playoffs and doing some things there. They've also got some esports. They've got live betting. They've got all kinds of great stuff. So go to Bet Online, where the game starts. Now, I have a little bit of this rule. The official umpire call said that Garver was in violation of rule 6.01 in parentheses J, which states, quote, if a runner does not engage in a bona fide slide and initiates, open parentheses, or attempts to make, close parentheses, contact with the fielder for the purpose of breaking up a double play, he should be called for interference. That's a whole lot of nothing. That's a whole lot of awful wording to say absolutely nothing. And the fact that, like, this is how it's written is stupid. First off, what on earth is a bona fide slide? Huh?
Yeah.
What is that?
I, and again, it's like, I watched the play and it was not a malicious slide. Like, he slides literally straight onto the bag. I was wondering if it's the fact that they do collide when he kind of goes over the, I know he's still on the bag, but like while he's still kind of in slide and Brendan Rodgers is throwing, there's a, I guess maybe that little collision, maybe it's the hands being up. But when you hear that definition, I mean, you just don't get a solid enough foundation, because I bet you, I'm almost certain a team is going to be on the other side of this, where they think after seeing this game that they have the challenge, they're going to go and do it, and an ump's going to say no. And
it's definitely going to, you know, encourage teams to do this now, but I think it's going to happen all the time. And it's going to be like a worse version of that stupid, like, oh, we're going to use instant replay to see if his hand came off the bag for just like a millisecond. And he's just like holding the glove. Like, it makes me so mad. Like, yeah, technically that's through. It's not the spirit of baseball. Like, if the throw doesn't beat him, they slide through it. But like, I don't know. I thought that the rule was you can't, it seems like you just can't make contact at all. Like, that's what
it has to be, right? Or at least the way
like, it's not like he did go like over the bag a little bit, but what I thought the rule was is that you can't go, like, you still have to be able to like touch the base from the end of your slide. And he most definitely could. He was basically, his butt was basically over the bag at the end of his slide. If he just like fell down, he would be sitting on it. His arm was most definitely still like within reach of the thing. And he's not, you know, going studs up or anything. Like, it's,
and it looks like too, he went straight at the bag too. And Rodgers was a little behind, and it just kind of looked like on the throw and the transfer, they just kind of got it. It's just where Rodgers's location was near on the bag happened to go. Cause he took off, and I mean, it was a straight line. I mean, it was like you said, no spikes up, hits the bag. And on, at least on the Rockies TV broadcast, they said that's how you used to teach it. I mean, that's how it used to be, where it was kind of a, and they even called it like a tough, hard baseball play. And I was like, yeah, really, it is, but like the really amount of not. Contact really was minimal. I think him getting the closeness of the play, the situation of the game, and maybe just that little bit of collision impacted Rodgers' throw. But I think really more likely was the fact that Rodgers' throw was just low. It was just a low throw there in a crucial time. But a huge stroke of luck by the Rockies, but this will be an example. Like you mentioned it, any team that has even the thought that they can get away with a slide challenge now, they're doing it. Every bang bang slide at second base, we will see challenged after this play. I'm almost certain, especially from the Rockies. The Rockies are definitely going to keep doing it. Until, you know,
the Rangers better do it too. Like, it's so annoying, and like it wasn't even like he was trying to go into it. It was more, the slide was more like, I'm getting big, I'm like getting in your way, I'm not going to like run through you, but like, I want to make it difficult for you to see, make the angle much tougher on the throw, which, like, yeah, that's what you should be doing. Like, that's a smart baseball play. It's not like, you know, Jose Bautista going cleats up trying to just kneecap Rougned Odor.
Right.
And, you know, getting decked in the face for it. Or, you know, that slide, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Chase Utley that, like, was it against the Cardinals that he injured somebody? It was just a real, real tough slide that kind of instigated that rule change.
Yeah.
But they need to rewrite this, because that is, this cannot stand.
That's so open to interpretation.
This cannot stand. It needs to be, you know, uniform, because otherwise you're going to have, you know, It could be, like you said, it could go either way. Like, it's just completely up to, like, whoever's in the booth, whatever in New York they're feeling like that day. I guess this one's, this is pretty bona fide. No, this is bona, but this isn't fide. Like, it's just so stupid.
Yeah, and, you know, especially, it's like, it all started, I feel like, with the writing of that rule, the parentheses J. When you're getting into that deep of, like, those random letters they put in the rule.
Rule 6.01 parentheses J. Like,
what are we, like,
this is so deep. What are we doing?
Yeah, that's,
what are we doing?
Every last hair, and it's just like, yeah, again, super happy, great for the Rockies. Awesome. But it is. I see that happening very soon. A team on the other end where they're just going to, and they're going to come out and be like, well, what happened there in Texas? Like, why isn't this one? And it's just, I understand the sentiment of the rule. I understand the thought process of it. And yes, we want to eliminate the cleats up violent slides. But that really wasn't it. Like, let's be real, Rockies fans here. Let's be completely honest. We'll take it. Obviously, we take those. But you look at it, and yes, it might have violated the text of the rule. But when you're talking about a bang bang tough play, I mean, that's kind of where my head lays on it. I mean, and that, a tough way to lose what was still a very close game with a huge momentum shift there of an error and a runner in scoring position again.
Yeah, it was, you know, and Nathaniel Lowe was up like that was. And the thing about it is Adolis Garcia might have beaten out the throw anyway, because he's really freaking fast. And that's part of what rushed it. So it was really upsetting. And Nathaniel Lowe was, you know, really hot at the plate. And he was coming up with Adolis Garcia at second base. Down one run. It's going to be close. Might have had his first home run of the season. But it's fine. We're all fine. But I am going to get into why this was a good actually, no, I'm just going to say it now because I don't want to talk any more about this stupid game after this. But the only good part about that stupid slide and that horrendous call is that it ended what was a kind of painful baseball game for both of us before it went to 16 innings, which would have destroyed the Rangers' pen. And their pitching is kind of, you know, pitching depth is having some issues because their opening day starter, John Gray, is hurt. We're going to get into what that means for the Rangers and about what to expect from him and if this is going to be a continual problem. But first, Paul's going to tell you guys about rockauto.com, which is sponsoring this episode.
Folks, yes, this episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Listen, Bryce, I know you. You got to drive around all the time. You're doing a million things. You don't have time to go and let someone look at a computer for you at the auto parts store. Skip it and just go do it at Rock Auto. While you're there, while you're at the kids' baseball game, while you're running errands, you can fire up rockauto.com right there on your phone, and you can get everything you need for your car or truck. And here's the best part. You're going to save 30%, 50%, even 100% on the same parts from a chain store or car dealership.
No way.
Yeah, it's a great deal. Why? Because Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and they have reliably low prices for every customer, everything you could ever need, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. And the website is so easy to use and explore, so you can find what you need for your vehicle today. And when you head to rockauto.com, you can see all the great parts available for your car or truck, and you can help out us here on the Locked On Podcast Network by writing Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box. Maybe even get a little more specialized if you're a Rangers or Rockies fan. Write Locked On Rockies, Locked On Rangers in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. You want to talk about our guy, my boy, John Gray, the Gray Wolf? Oh, woo!
I very much do.
Aren't going to be a thing you're going to have to deal with still. It's unfortunate that he's already there and he's never been able to figure it out. But pretty decent start before he had to get taken out.
Yeah, against a really, really tough lineup. And, you know, heading into the offseason when my expectations were so low, they were so low because I had no confidence in this ownership group to spend any, because they literally just traded away two really good players, two all-stars at the deadline, because they didn't want to pay him. And one of them is, you know, the greatest homegrown player since Mark Teixeira. It's just a fact. One of their only great homegrown position players, or just players in general for the last like 20 years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had low expectations, but I thought, okay, you need to get at least one starter. You probably need two. But at the top of my realistic hopes list was John Gray, because he's got some crazy raw stuff. He put up some, I don't know if you know about his high school number. I haven't looked up. I can't remember exactly what it was off the top of my head. But he had some like absolutely insane high school numbers in Oklahoma. And he was a number 3 overall pick. And, you know, he pitched that well while in Coors, which is a special skill and takes a special kind of pitcher. But I was really excited about this guy. And now he's got a blister. And we're going to have to wait, you know, 2 more weeks until we get to see another start of his. Is this going to happen all the time?
You will deal with blisters from John Gray again. Unfortunately, it's something that he has dealt with in his entire career that we've seen. And it's such a frustrating injury, I'm sure. I mean, there's really only probably so much you can do when it comes to managing and dealing with a blister when it comes to, you can't put a ton of stuff on your fingers and your hands, you know, if you're trying to negate any of that. It's the grip, the way you hold the ball. But if you're going to change your grip on a pitch at the major league level, that could have a major implications on the success of that pitch. So the blisters, unfortunately, will be part of what John Gray does. But man, this is something that the Rockies, and today is going to be a prime example of the impact of losing John Gray, because the Rockies don't have Gray in their rotation anymore. He's been such a solid piece. When John Gray goes out there every third, fourth day and the 3-4 spot in your rotation, you're confident that if his stuff's on, he's striking people out. If he's going to have great velocity, he's going to throw some gas, and he's going to have some get strikeouts. When John Gray is on, he's striking people out, and it's really, really great. So it's crazy to say this, but as the offseason went on, as we've gotten closer, and as we're at this stage of the season right now, I think losing John Gray is a bigger deal for the Rockies than losing Trevor Story.
Wow. That's
because here's the deal. You have a pitcher that loved Coors Field. You have a pitcher that embraced pitching there. You have someone that the Rockies have developed and has been there and have believed in, and they wanted them and or wanted him back. Clearly not as much as the Rangers, as we heard from there's a really great interview, and we listened to it, that Danielle Allentuck, she works for the Colorado Springs Gazette here, there in Denver. She basically asked John Gray, like, if the Rockies matched the contract, would you have taken it, or was it the money? I'm paraphrasing, it wasn't exactly like that, but it basically came down to, I think John Gray was looking for that fresh start and the chance to be the number one guy. The Rangers clearly really liked John Gray. Constant communication, big deal, and said, hey, you're number one, you're opening day. I mean, that's how could John Gray really say no? And he's just such a good pitcher. I'm not going to say all-star great pitcher. He's really, realistically, is he most staff's number one pitcher? No, but he's someone that you can turn to and have confidence knowing that he's going to give you, if he can give you a performance, if he's locating his pitches, John Gray's going to give you a good start, a quality start for sure.
Yeah, and I didn't think that the Rangers had done this, because I didn't like process him as this type of signing, but it's something that the Rangers have done really, really well the last few years, and I've said it probably 100,000 times on this podcast, but they take those guys who are stars, who have shown some promise, who have been like top prospects, and have just been like kind of like, you know, fine-ish at the major league level, and make them, you know, top 10 Cy Young candidates. They did it with Mike Minor, they did it with Lance Lynn, they did it with Kyle Gibson. Like, they have a track record with these guys. It's not 100% success rate, because they did it with Jordan Lyles, and Jordan Lyles is still Jordan Lyles, and you know, he almost turned down a contract.
Is he a Rocky too, Jordan Lyles?
What?
Wasn't Jordan Lyles a Rocky too?
He was. He was a Rocky, and he was very mediocre with them, with the Pirates, and with the Rangers, and now with the Orioles. Like, he's going, taking his trips of mediocrity. So, and they also, you know, didn't fix Mike Woltynewicz, which, that was going to be a tough ask to do that. But I'm curious, as we kind of get towards the end of this episode, I have one big question for you, and I don't know if you can answer it, because I don't know if anybody can answer it, but, like, what are the Rockies doing, like, in a general sense? Because you trade away Nolan Arenado, first off. You eat so much of the contract, you get minimal prospects in return for what is probably the best third baseman to play the game since Adrian Beltre. And because you're too poor, and you also let John Gray leave because you're too poor, you let Trevor Story leave, who liked Coors, who wanted to play there from what I understand, because you're too poor. And then you go sign Chris freaking Bryant to basically the exact same deal as Nolan Arenado. Like, what? Oh, what on earth? What? Why do they do that?
Yeah, it's something that we were asking. A lot of people were asking. To me, it's to usher in a new generation of Rockies baseball. The Rockies didn't want to go into a season. The Rockies don't do rebuilds. They will never do what the Orioles do. They'll never do what the Rays did in the past. They will never completely tear it down, blow it up, and all that stuff, because
they can still be just as bad as a rebuilding team when they're not. What?
See, that's the thing. The Rockies are fine if they try to do something, make a splash, and they'll still finish in the, you know, mid-70s wins. They want to be competitive. They think that word rebuild is bad for the brand and bad for business. Rockies will always have attendance. That's what, with bad or good, we always know people are going to go to the game. But what
teams want to go see how pretty Coors is.
Yeah, I mean, well, and so many people from California live in Colorado, so many people from Texas, Chicago, all those people have moved to Denver, and of course they're just going to, or will travel to Denver to go, who doesn't want to go watch a baseball game in the middle of June in Denver, Colorado? I
mean, oh, I've done it multiple times. It's perfect. It's so amazing.
Yeah, you give props to the Monfort there and the Rockies there. Coors Field is arguably one of the best places to watch a baseball game in terms of the stadium environment and all that stuff.
I think I have it number one, and I've been to like, I want to say eight, maybe 10 major league stadiums.
Yeah, I haven't been to everywhere, but I've been around the country, and I've been to Wrigley and Fenway and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And I mean, there's better atmospheres, quote unquote, but if you're looking for just a great place to go watch a baseball game, like Coors Field can't be beat. And this new, basically what the Rockies, I think trying to go, this was the Breidich era had this huge ceiling, and instead they fall flat on their face. They don't. I mean, it's crazy. What difference would it be if in 2017 Breidich, instead of signing Ian Desmond, signed CJ Krohn? I mean, that's literally as simple as it could be of how big of a what if you could go back on this team, and that completely could change the trajectory of this team. Instead of having this non first baseman, first base guy who was statistically one of the worst players in baseball, you could have CJ Krohn come bat 280 and hit balls 454 feet into the wind. I don't know if you saw his first home run, but the wind was blowing 20 miles an hour, and he blasted it through the jet stream and it still went another like 450. It was crazy. So I think this is what Bill Schmidt, when he came in, what I've kind of pieced together and after reading a bunch of beat reporters who have getting more access, it sounds like Monfort was way more in control than I thought last year. I thought since they appointed their now GM, Bill Schmidt, as the interim GM.
They actually do have a GM now. Okay, yes. That's nice. It's good to know. Yes. Didn't they go from like at least a decent chunk of the offseason without one?
Well, we were an interim GM all season last year after Breidich slowly steps away in, you know, a couple months after the Nolan Arenado trade. Jeff Breidich is my least favorite Rockies person ever.
Justifiably so.
Because you know, you mentioned it too, Bryce. You know, going into this offseason for Rockies fans, it's Nolan Arenado just got traded. You know, best player since Todd Helton, Larry Walker. I mean, literally probably better than them. If you
he would have had better career stats if he had, you know, not been traded for pennies on the dollar for no stupid reason. Oh my God.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I'm so insane the Rangers didn't make that, but the prospects are showing some really interesting things. It's coming to become more clear, but it's more of why was this the plan? I think they went after and they did Chris Bryant because they wanted to just start over, and they tried for Trevor Story, they tried for John Gray. They just kind of said, all right, I think that era, this era is good. And that's why it's good that I think Trevor and John left for them too, because I just think the last few years of the, especially last season for the two of them, will I be traded? Am I going to get the contract deal? What really is my relationship and role with the Rockies? I think the Rockies just kind of made the split and said, hey, our next era of Rockies baseball, it didn't work. And I think at one point, I think ownership needs to talk to the fans and discuss, because it really sucks. It really sucks that Nolan Arenado, DJ LeMahieu, and Trevor Story aren't still the infield. I mean, they still could be the infield of the Colorado Rockies right now. Mm-hmm. But they need, at one point, I think we'll have to address and talk about that, because that was a failure. It was a total failure of probably the most competitive Rockies team ever. They were just a couple of pieces away. They were one game away from beating the Dodgers. But now they're just trying to say, here, we're going to try it again with these other pieces, with this team that's going to be designed to hit the ball more. They trade Raimel Tapia away. They get someone in Gurchek whose literal job is to just apparently hit home runs. He's played some decent defense and has made a factor for the Rockies since coming over in these four games. But they said, Chris Bryant's going to lead this team. We're going to extend Ryan McMahon. He's going to be our, you know, I mean, he's as good as Nolan is defensively right now. Maybe not. Ryan McMahon went to the church of Nolan Arenado for a long time. So, he got to, I mean, Ryan McMahon is going to win the Gold Glove. Put it here, sign, seal. I'm breaking Nolan's streak this year. He's already made some tremendous defensive plays. And they also said, you know, CJ Krohn's going to be a part of this. We got this Connor Joe guy. Like, they just, it's just a new era. And it was messy. It was ugly. There's no real good reason why they decided, I think, just say, let's go with this Chris Bryant thing instead of trying to keep what they had, other than it simply just didn't work. And it didn't work for the relationships within the organization, didn't work for some of the players. And now, you know, here we go. We got Chris Bryant leading the way. And my thing with when people that don't understand the Chris Bryant thing, and I still try to figure out too, is remember, Chris Bryant could have went anywhere. I mean, Chris, yeah. there are teams, maybe the Rockies paid him a little bit more, but don't be surprised if there were teams with a similar deal to Chris Bryant out there.
I'm surprised Seattle didn't just go ahead and sign him to that contract, like, especially with where they are. But, like, I do say, I will say that in a team that, like, was, I don't know what they're going to do this year, because they're 3-1. They won a series against the Dodgers, but I don't know if they do end up being kind of a rebuilding type of team. You got to have one star. You got to have one guy so the fans can say, okay, let's go to the park to see that guy. Like, right. We may suck, but I'm going to watch Joey Gallo hit some home runs, which the Rangers couldn't say at the back half. Rangers fans couldn't say at the back half of the season. Now the Rangers, I mean, they're going to be mediocre probably this year. They're fighting to be mediocre, about 500. But they've got, hey, let's go see Corey freaking Seager. Let's go see Marcus Semien. Let's go see Mitch Garver. Let's go see John Gray in a couple weeks. Like, there's some real excitement, some real reason to pack the stadium, which both these teams have pretty nice stadiums. Actually, confession, I still haven't been to the Rangers' new stadium just yet.
Ballpark,
I am going in at the end of April, but
that is is that the biggest baseball park there is? I mean, it seems massive.
It plays really big. And I think we're going to learn more about how the Rangers ballpark plays this year, because I couldn't judge it for the first 2 years. The team sucks so bad. Like, I can't count anything. I'm like, is the ball not caring because the Rangers can't hit anything, or is it because the ballpark plays big?
Like, yeah, there's the roof too. I guess, you know, I don't know if the roof being opened or closed changes anything, or I don't know.
It seems to at this point, but like, I feel like you need 5 years in a park to kind of actually get a sense of it. But
yeah.
Another game tonight, and who is this? We have Martin Perez, and who's starting for y'all?
Cool. He's getting his start there. His Rockies debut. Chad Kuhl is getting the start. He was in Pittsburgh. He's been in Pittsburgh his whole career. 5-7 last year. 42 ERA in 28 games. 80 innings pitched. I literally know nothing about this guy. This is one option the Rockies have for a quote unquote John Gray replacement, because this would be where you would maybe even have John Gray at this point at your five and go there. So today will be our first look at a professional setting of the John Gray replacement and how well Chad will be able to perform, you know, to kind of just put a bow on the Rockies and on the offseason and everything. There's been a lot of people adopting the weird but fun mantra so far about the Rockies. And I think that's it. I mean, yes, it's confusing. Yes, it's weird. Yes, it's the last few years have been incredibly frustrating. But, hey, we just beat the Dodgers two out of three. That was fun. And, you know, Rockies baseball's back. We're having a blast. And so there's a new energy around the team, which I think is good. When as unfortunate and as painful as losing all those players that you love are gone, I do think there is a benefit that this is it. This is the team. Really, the only piece left is the old guard, Charlie Blackman, and he's got his own stuff to be worrying about than you know, other stuff of chemistry and things of that nature. He's got to stop being a curmudgeon and start playing DH and not wanting to play right field like he's insisting.
Well, I look forward to watching a lot of Rockies weird but fun baseball, and hopefully you can see quite a bit of weird but fun Rangers baseball. That's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Rangers and Locked On Rockies. Thank you so much, Paul, for joining me. Hopefully tonight's game ends in a less catastrophic and frustrating way for both of us and is just a much better baseball game in general.
Hopefully a few less errors, too.
Hopefully. We'll see. We'll see if the Rangers can actually catch and throw baseballs properly tonight. But that'll do it for this edition of Locked On Rangers. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.